This is a listener-supported service of the School of Journalism and Strategic Media at the University of Arkansas, 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, March 7th, 2019. I'm Kyle Kellums. Ahead this hour, singer-songwriter Gretchen Peters is on stage at Walton Art Center tonight at 7:30. We'll ask her questions about her songs that can, in a matter of just 5.5 minutes, unspool character-driven short stories. That's ahead. And ahead on NPR's Here and Now this afternoon, a continued look at Chicago's improv scene with a visit to the I.O. Theater, where aspiring comedians come to learn the art of improv. That story, this afternoon's news and more on Here and Now, beginning at 1, right after today's Ozarks at Large. Tonight, a free screening of the film Salaam will take place on the University of Arkansas campus. The documentary is about Pakistani physicist Abdussalam, and there will be a director's talk after tonight's screening. The film will be shown at 7 this evening in the Graduate Education Auditorium on campus. No admission charge. This is Ozarks at Large. New data regarding the use of public school discipline in Arkansas reveals continued widespread use of both corporal and exclusionary punishment. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich recently spoke with Sarah McKenzie. McKenzie's executive director of the Office of Education Policy at the University of Arkansas, an agency that monitors school discipline in the state.
Over 80% of school districts in Arkansas use corporal punishment. Arkansas also has a high rate of K-12 suspensions involving more than 163,000 students last year. The data is provided by school districts to the Arkansas Department of Education. The Office of Education Policy at the University of Arkansas Fayetteville tracks such data and publishes periodic reports on public school discipline. Sarah McKenzie serves as executive director.
We don't know a lot about the reasons. Schools self-report the infractions for student discipline, and there are certain reporting categories that they can identify that are pretty broad.
Majority of discipline referrals are for insubordination, according to data, disorderly conduct, or other infractions. Arkansas is one of 19 states that still permits spanking of students, even in high school, and among the top three, along with Alabama and Mississippi, for incidents of corporal punishment. Statewide, students were hit a total of 15,453 times last year, which McKenzie says is monitored by local school boards. And there are strict rules to dispensing physical punishment.
The rules are that there has to be at least two administrators or an administrator and a teacher present, and that they cannot use their bare hand, and that there is a specific criteria about how the corporal punishment's going to be addressed.
In some districts, students cited with infractions are given a pink slip to take home, which lists disciplinary choices. Parents circle their option and sign it. The kids take it back to school. According to the Arkansas School Board Association, a wooden paddle is most commonly used to administer punishment on the rear end. Districts that practice corporal punishment must comply with Arkansas Code, which grants broad authority to physically strike children as well as liability immunity. But late last year, the American Academy of Pediatrics issued a policy warning against the harmful effects of corporal punishment based on a 2016 meta-analysis of studies, which found that spanking doesn't work and that it doesn't differ from physical abuse.
So there's no, you know, randomized controlled trials about the effects of corporal punishment, because you aren't going to randomly put students into a corporal punishment category or a non-corporal punishment category. So the research is going to be sort of a compilation. And I do think that the American Academy of Pediatric claims were very strong. I think that there are some school districts that have chosen not to use corporal punishment as a disciplinary measure in their schools. There's 61 school districts in the state that don't use it. But I know from experience that sometimes those schools just call the parents, and then the parents come and check the kid out of school for a minute and take him out in the parking lot and administer spankings and then bring the student back in. So it's really not solving the problem by the school not doing it. I think the community really has to get engaged, and schools can lead that effort.
Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families find that Arkansas has one of the highest incidents of children suffering from abuse and neglect, 56%, and that children who act out in class are also often struggling to read and perform on grade level. According to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control, kids ages 8 to 18 spend on average 7.5 hours per day in front of screens. As a consequence, they play less outdoors and talk less as a family. That isolation, experts say, can negatively impact classroom environments where children may act out in frustration, unable to properly express their needs.
And there's been some research into screen time and reduced attention. I also think that kids that are in school now, though, they have a lot of ways to get the information that they want and that they need. And if they're sitting in a classroom where they aren't being taught or understand how what they're being taught connects to something meaningful for them, it's going to be harder in some cases for students to comply. They're more of a Netflix generation, right, where they want to learn about this now and then they want to learn about this now. They are not interested in watching a thing about avalanches or documentaries. So that more a la carte information starting from the student, not that you don't want to teach the standards, you do need to teach the standards, but a one-size-fits-all front of the room, teacher lecturing, everybody's doing the same worksheet, we know that's not getting our kids where they want to go.
Last year, 109,000 students were given in-school suspensions, 54,000 out-of-school suspensions, which is referred to as exclusionary punishment, isolating students from the general population. State lawmakers have tried to control the practice, passing bills that prohibit expulsion for truancy and banning out-of-school suspensions for K-5 students.
There are cases, I think, where students are struggling so much within the context of the school environment that they're a danger to themselves and others, or significant disruption to the learning. And schools really are not set up to deal with that kind of behavior. We've talked about increasing the number of school counselors to try to provide more school support for mental health for these students, to give them the skills that they need before they get to that point. But it's definitely a challenge because the mission of the school is to educate students. And it can be difficult to address the needs of those students within a sort of typical school classroom environment.
And in-school detentions continue to be widely used in Arkansas. Additional exclusionary practices include behavior classrooms where sequestered children with discipline issues receive extra attention and counseling, as well as alternative learning environments.
So alternative learning environments can take a bunch of different forms, and sometimes those can actually look more like what a lot of us in education reform would like real classroom environments to look like, being really student-driven, being flexible in terms of time, moving away from specific, you know, square peg, round hole settings. And I think if we think about education more holistically, we would have more environments that might bring on those characteristics.
Sarah McKenzie says special discipline rules are in place for students with disabilities. For example, they can't be expelled if the infraction is related to their disability. A disproportionate number of students of color, data show, are being subjected to discipline in Arkansas schools. And McKenzie says what would help is hiring many more teachers who look like their students.
Most of our teachers in Arkansas are white, and there's often a discrepancy between the enrollment of students at the school and the race ethnicity breakdown of their teachers. So just continuing to try to think about alternate ways that we can increase the diversity of our workforce and increase the cultural sensitivity and behavior modification skills of our teachers so that we can spend more time teaching kids in the classroom and less time disciplining them.
Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families recommends Arkansas public schools adopt alternative disciplinary practices such as positive behavioral interventions.
I think one thing is groups like Arkansas Teacher Corps, they do a lot of training with their teachers about sort of restorative justice practices and making sure that teachers, as they're heading into the classroom, are familiar with how to interact differently with these kids and with these type of situations and how to really connect with the community in which they're placed. And I think that sometimes our traditional education preparation programs don't focus enough on not just teaching teachers how to teach, but also how to maybe think about discipline differently.
And safe, orderly, and caring school cultures can help students learn and thrive. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
You can find a link to the latest reporting on school discipline by Arkansas Advocates and Children and Families at ozarksatlarge.com. And full disclosure time, my wife, Laura, is the director of the Northwest Arkansas Office of Arkansas Advocates for Children and Families. I had nothing to do with the assigning, writing, or editing of this story. Beer and Hymns is a nonprofit organization combining sing-alongs with drinking beer and creating community in an effort to raise money for charity. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda recently spoke with the husband and wife duo that co-founded the organization to learn more about it, and she brings us this report.
The first edition of Beer and Hymns in Northwest Arkansas took place in June of 2016. In spite of the scorching summer heat, a crowd gathered on Bentonville Brewing Company's patio and sipped their beers as they sang along with the band. Ken and Casey Weatherford are the co-founders of the nonprofit and say the Beer and Hymns model can be traced back to at least the 1600s. The modern iteration took root in 2006 during a Christian music festival in the UK.
Where, you know, it's okay to be Christian and drink at the same time. And it's called Green Belt, and some guys grabbed some guitars and took them into the beer tent and started playing some hymns, and everybody joined in. And from there, it went back to their local pubs and then literally all over the world. You can find Beer and Hymns communities in Hong Kong, in Australia, all over Europe, and all over the United States. The Wild Goose Festival, which takes place in North Carolina each year, is kind of the birthplace for America. But it hopped across by way of Green Belt originally.
Ken says they loved the idea, but thought there could be something more to it, so they added songs based on a theme.
So we do about an hour's worth of hymns, and we do about an hour's worth of songs on a theme, all intermingled. So, you know, if Jesus is not your thing, that's cool. Stick around. The next song's Bob Dylan, or whatever. So we have a lot of fun with that. But then we still felt like there could be something more to this. And so we added the charitable element, and where we give back to a different local charity every single month. And that's really been transformative for us as an organization.
Casey says that makes the event more compelling because it's not just about live music. It's about fostering community and giving back to others.
One thing we want to make sure when we have our events is that we have it in a space that is naturally fostering community anyway. So like long community tables where people just sit by maybe somebody they don't know or they get up and mingle and wander around and shake a new hand, pass song sheets. So it kind of the atmosphere definitely plays into being about the community, and then the charity portion just, you know, seals the deal that it's really it's not about us, it's about this community and bringing people together for common good.
When Bentonville Brewing Company moved to Rogers, Ken says they partnered with Bike Rack Brewing Company because at the time they wanted to stay in Bentonville. Jared Sears, event coordinator at Bike Rack, says he remembers the first Beer and Hymns event at their 8th Street Market location.
At Bike Rack, you see these kind of different people groups come for different reasons and events, right? You got your cornhole group, you've got your music group, you get your comedy group, and he had a whole different community that was coming out with him. And what was really neat, it was young and old. It was multiple generations, really, honestly. And there was just this joy of, you know, they handed out pieces of paper with the song lyrics on it, and people could follow along and just enjoy it and have a good time. You know, everybody knew the songs. Even if they didn't go to church, you heard some of these songs before, and so you're singing along with them, you know. So that was a really, I was really pleased to see, you know, because our bike rack's also like a kid-friendly brewery too. Like, we want you to come bring your kids and have fun. We have games. So for them to be able to sing and then grandma to be able to sing was a really cool experience, so.
Today, Beer and Hymns events still occur at Bike Rack one Sunday a month.
They bring that communal feel. I mean, people can drink alone and they can pray alone, but there's a reason that there are bars and there's a reason there's churches, right? And so there you can do all that stuff in your own house doing it, but the community aspect of coming together and singing songs, whatever those songs are, it just creates like a joyful spirit in the room.
Jared says prior to their current partnership, he and Beer and Hymns co-founder Ken Weatherford knew a little about each other because they both led worship at churches in Bentonville. Ken continues to lead worship at a church, but says he and his wife Casey are not using Beer and Hymns as an active recruiting event.
No bait and switch, no prayer time, no message. You're not going to get a scripture reading or anything like
we
that.
We barely even mentioned that. Yeah, you know, like, the church is a sponsor of ours because they provide the printing and they provide time and funds for Ken to do this.
You'll never hear me invite you to my church. Hey, if you come, great, that's fine. But that's just not what it's about. We have people from all different walks of life, different backgrounds. So many people who just come to me at all these different events and just said, you know, I can't have anything to do with the church anymore, but I miss singing these songs. And I'm like, great, that's awesome. So if it's a connection in that way, wonderful. We just believe in community so much. And so, yeah, the hymns does sometimes turn people off, but I've always been amazed when people will be there and I'll hand out a song sheet and I don't know, man. I don't know if I want to sing that. Fine, that's fine. Just hang out. We're raising money for this great charity tonight. And they'll stick around, and by the end of the night, they're singing along.
The other side of the coin is sometimes people who are okay with the hymns are skeptical of the beer.
Our very first event, we began sharing it online, and somebody that was not too keen on the idea, commented about it and said, "Oh, it's just going to be a bunch of drunks singing 'How Great Thou Art.'" And to which I said, "Yeah, like, what's wrong with that? Isn't that a beautiful thing?" That we're coming together as a community and celebrating life and reaching hands across tables. We live in such an unbelievably divided world. You don't have to even call attention to that. Everybody knows that, right? And so when we get together, it's the most beautiful thing because I see people who voted one way, voted another way, or didn't vote at all because they just couldn't. And I get all of those things. And they're all hanging out together. And they're all giving back to their community together. They're shaking hands. They're fostering friendships. There's not many places that do that anymore.
The nonprofit has grown significantly over the last 3 years, especially with its charitable giving. In addition to raising money at events, they have launched a membership program with tiers ranging from $5 to $100 per month. Last year, Ken says they raised about $13,000. This year, they anticipate raising more than $30,000.
I'm thrilled with where we are. I can't believe how far it's grown, especially this last year. And then looking at what we see on the horizon for us right now, I know we'll be at 4, potentially even 5 venues by the end of this year in Northwest Arkansas. But we're also beginning conversations outside of Northwest Arkansas as well. And so I can't believe how fast it's taking off. I think people really are grabbing hold of especially the giving back piece of it.
Community members can next raise their voice and their glass from 5 to 7 Sunday evening at Bike Rack Brewing's 8th Street Market location. 10% of sales plus all donations will benefit Arkansas Support Network. Another event is scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. March 14th at Core Brewing Company's Emma Avenue Tap Room in Springdale. More information is available at beerandhymns.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Friends of the Fayetteville Public Library are hosting a book sale Saturday from 9 until 1, and then again Sunday from 1 to 5. Sale will be held in the library's lobby. It includes children's and paperback books and $1 hardback books. Proceeds from the sale support the library.
The 43rd annual Hogeye Marathon will run Saturday, April 6th in Springdale. The nonprofit event will include a full and half marathon, 5K run, and four-person marathon relay, and will benefit several local charities. Finisher medals available for all distances. Information, including registration, expo opportunities, sponsor options, and volunteer spots, available at HogeyeMarathon.com. Walton Arts Center's 10x10 Arts Series presents Aquila Theater Company's A Midsummer Night's Dream, Saturday, March 16th, beginning at 8 p.m. One of Shakespeare's most beloved and witty comedies is brought to life in an innovative new production by the critically acclaimed Aquila Theater Company. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets and information. Theater Squared's season continues with The Wolves. In this finalist for the Pulitzer Prize for Drama, a pack of adolescent warriors navigate life's big questions from the safety of the suburbs and the soccer field. Performances Tuesday through Sunday, now through March 24th. 443-5600 or theater2.org for tickets and information.
What is this on the table between us? This is beautiful.
This is a very beautiful book that has just come out, like in the last 2 weeks, I think. It is C.D. Wright, or some people know her as Carolyn, last book that she was writing for many years and then was put together after she died.
That's Kathy Thompson a few days ago in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio. Kathy is a talented artist, Fayetteville resident, and a longtime friend of the late C.D. Wright. Kathy, along with Matthew Henriksen, is organizing a tribute and community read for Wright's posthumously published work, Casting Deep Shade, the final collection of her poems. The gathering will take place Saturday evening at Nightbird Books in Fayetteville. C.D. Wright was born in Mountain Home and earned degrees from Memphis and the University of Arkansas. She gained international acclaim and praise for her poetry. In her New York Times obituary, she was described as rooted in her Southern heritage, yet at the same time, utterly beyond category. Kathy Thompson's description of her friend echoes that line.
She was an incredibly unusual person, but also an incredibly just normal human being. And I think that the incredible human being part of her was the amazing poet that she was and how she looked at the world. And she was a MacArthur Award winner, among other things. And but she also... I got to know C.D. when we were all living here in the mid-70s and on through, and we started a garden in her backyard together. She loved the outdoors, and hence this book. It's about trees, really. It's about her favorite tree, mostly the beech tree. And that's because it's what grew around where she lived, all along the Buffalo River, and... She just started going and finding beech trees and roots and having Denny photograph them. And she had been, right before she died, she had been in South America. And I think there were amazing trees there, too, that she took photographs of. But so there were definitely those two different sides of Carolyn, but in a way, I guess they were all the same side.
I love that the title of this book is Casting Deep Shade.
Mm-hmm.
It's a beautiful title.
It is. Well, beech trees can grow to be huge trees, 300-year-old trees. So they're going to have a big, wide umbrella to cast that deep shade. And, you know, I'm sure it means something else also.
Well, it makes me think. I never met C.D. in person, but I talked to her on the phone a couple of times. And as I was listening back, the conversations with her were never about her. She was championing somebody else.
Oh yes, always.
Writers who had passed or writers who were alive. You know, she was the Lost Roads Project that celebrated Arkansas writers.
I worked with her, with she and Debbie on the Lost Roads Project. Yeah. I did a small little section of it.
You know, it's amazing. She was always, seemingly to me, you knew her obviously far better than I did, but she was always seemingly championing others, even as talented as she was.
Yeah, she did not like particularly the light to shine on her too much. Now, there were times when, yes, but aren't we all like that? But no, I agree with you. What mattered to her was her life and her writing and her family and her, not just her immediate family, but her mom and dad and her mama. I think she called her Mamo and Papo, her grandparents. But they, you know, had a huge influence on her. On her life, as most of our parents have, but her father, they were very supportive of her. And, you know, but a lot of parents during that time period thought we were all crazy too, because we were so determined to have our own way about things.
Saturday at Nightbird Books is a celebration of this book and of her life and of her work, mm-hmm. right? What will happen?
What will happen, Matt Hendrickson and I are co-hosting it, and Lisa, of course, is giving us the space.
Lisa Sharp.
And yes, she's so generous that way. And it's become a gathering spot for poets. Anyone can come, and anyone can read. So I've invited a few people that I knew that would probably like to read, and there'll be people just from the community. There'll be friends. Old friends of hers. Her brother will be there, though I don't think Warren will read. And it's just going to be people passing the book around. I'm going to mark some places for myself. I don't know if I'll read. I probably will. And then people can just pick up the book and read.
And it should be pointed out, just in case we haven't made it clear, she's an Arkansas voice.
Yes, she is. She's more than an Arkansas voice. She's a world voice.
Yes. Yes. Just, we like to claim what we can.
Oh,
here. Yes.
Well, absolutely. And you know what? She was proud of it, too. She really was. Carolyn loved being able to tell people where she was from. She's very proud to be, you know, an Arkansas native.
Kathy Thompson of Fayetteville is helping organize a community read and event celebrating C.D. Wright's posthumously published book of poems, Casting Deep Shade, published just a couple of weeks ago from Copper Canyon Press. C.D. Wright died in early 2016. She was a past poet laureate of Rhode Island and a professor of English and professor of literary arts at Brown University. The event Saturday night begins at 5 at Nightbird Books in downtown Fayetteville, and it is open to the public. Gretchen Peters could never write another song, and her stature as a songwriter would be rock solid. She's composed many memorable songs, including Independence Day, a major hit for Martina McBride about a woman involved in and exiting an abusive relationship. The song has been ranked in the top 100 country songs ever by the likes of Rolling Stone and CMT. Peters, though, has written scores more songs that, in just 5 or 6 minutes, bring us portraits that seem like novels. She's performing tonight at Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville at 7:30. This week, we reached her in Nashville and asked her about writing songs that seem like short stories.
I'm a very visual songwriter, and I think that because of that, I kind of look at my songs as little movies, and I feel like, I mean, I teach songwriting workshops, and I tell my students this all the time. I feel like if you can give people a sense of where you are, you know, put them in the movie right at the very beginning of your song. There is so much visual information that sort of stands in as shorthand for character information, really, about the character. But really, I think ultimately it's about it is about economy of words, and it's about understanding which details in a song are going to tell you the most about the person in the song. You know, writing coaches and teachers and everything always talk about use detail, but it's important which details you use as well, because certain details will tell you loads and loads of information. And I look to songs, one that I always think of that's such a great example of that is Sunday Morning Coming Down. Mm. It's a whole character sketch. You feel like, it really, in the first verse of that song, you feel like you know this guy completely.
Well, I woke up Sunday morning with no way to hold my head. That didn't hurt. And the beer I had for breakfast wasn't bad, so I had one more for dessert.
I think I just osmosed a lot of that knowledge listening to songs growing up. I mean, there was no such thing as, you know, writing workshops when I was coming up. So I think I just sort of absorbed that idea of building a character through telling details. It is about which details you show. And I go back to the film thing. I look at songs as kind of like, to me, they're like little movies. And what are you showing me? What pictures are you showing me? And that's kind of how I naturally gravitated towards writing anyway.
And you do that so well in so many songs, but perhaps best, in my opinion, on Dancing with the Beast, your latest CD, in the song Wichita.
My name is Coralie. I just turned 12 years old. There's something wrong with me. That's what the doctor told my mama on a rainy Kansas night when I was born. My mama cursed the doctor, and the doctor cursed the storm. My daddy took the bus to Arkansas, one way from Wichita. I may not know too much, I may not be too smart. There may be something wrong.
We know this character, and maybe... maybe you don't tell me all the details, but by the time the song is done, I've filled in many myself. Is that part of the trick?
Well, that's definitely part of it. I mean, I think it's what you don't say. Sometimes that's more important. And I also really, I'm a big believer that the audience or the listener, I think Paul Simon once said, the listener is the last co-writer on a song. In a sense, the audience kind of finishes the song for you because they are filling in their own details. And I think songs are much more interesting and intriguing when you don't have every fact, you know, in the palm of your hand. Another example I think of when I think about that is one of my favorite songs ever. It was just Leonard Cohen's famous Blue Raincoat. You know, I can still listen to that song 30 years later and go, what exactly happened here? But there's something completely compelling about it, and you get all the emotion and all the tension, not necessarily all the details.
Same with Arguing with Ghosts, which is the first song on Dancing with the Beast. There's just enough there to let me know what, I don't have the lyric in front of me, but about the, since the drive-in closed down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I got lost in,
yes,
my hometown ever since they closed the drive-in down.
I get lost in my hometown since they tore the drive-in down. Find myself all turned around. I get lost in my hometown. I'm getting hard to recognize.
Another trick, or not trick, but another talent is relatability. How I feel that you're writing about me.
I think that a lot of what people think of is, you know, songwriters want to write something universal. All writers want to write something universal. But I think sort of maybe paradoxically, you get to the universal through the very specific. If you can create a character that exists in their own place in their own time, there are basically really a handful of human emotions that we all feel and we have all felt. And if you can make that character live and breathe and go through whatever they're going through in the story, chances are people are going to relate if the character is real to them. So I think it's not really so much about going for, a universal character, somebody that everyone can relate to, as it is going for universal emotion. Mm. And there really are only a handful of those.
You mentioned earlier that you quoted Paul Simon, that the audience is kind of the last co-writer. But isn't that a little frightening? Because we could misinterpret or...
Yeah, and that's exactly right. And you have to learn to let go of the idea that you can control what everybody thinks. happened in your song. I have had wonderful and hilarious and insightful, I wouldn't even call them misunderstandings of my lyrics, but reinterpretations of my lyrics. For instance, my co-writer and I, Ben Glover, wrote Dancing with the Beast. We were really writing about the beast as depression. Mm. And I had so many people come up to me and say how important that song was to them because for them it was about addiction, or for them it was about literal abuse, or for them it was about self-doubt or self-esteem issues. It was almost like a mirror that anyone could hold up and see whatever they needed to see. And to me, that is a successful song. If the song moves people, it's not up to me in what particular ways it moves them.
Gretchen, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to talk to you, Kyle.
If anything, it's that he cares too much.
Gretchen Peters is playing at Walton Arts Center tonight at 7:30. You can find out more about the show at waltonartcenter.org.
Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art in Bentonville encourages artful living to boost moods, whether by strolling the galleries for free or by making it a Mindful Monday at the museum. Featuring a rotation of Monday classes, including meditation, yoga, and art, and drawing. CrystalBridges.org for more information. KUAF welcomes Steve Earle and the Dukes to the Auditorium in Eureka Springs Friday, May 3rd. A limited number of reserved tickets go on sale Friday, March 8th at 10 a.m. at 888-695-0888 or online at theauditorium.org. Support for KUAF comes from Malco Cinemas and Grills, located in Rogers, Springdale, Fort Smith, and the Razorback Cinema Grill and IMAX in Fayetteville. Malco Theaters offer avoidance of sold-out movies and waiting in line with online ticket sales. Advance tickets to neighborhood Malco Theaters available online at malco.com.
With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Lee Wood, who is the host and producer of the KUAF Vinyl Hour. You can hear it Saturday night at 5 on 91.3, Sunday evening at 5 on KUAF 3. How are you, Lee?
I'm good. How are you?
Good.
Good.
We've established that.
Everybody's good. This week's show is good. Do you want to know how?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Actually, it's really sweet. I like it very much. So I have two members of a local band. Jamie Lou and the Hullabaloo mm-hmm. is a band name you may have heard. They've been playing a lot of shows and have upcoming shows. So I have Jamie Lou Conley and Garrett Brolin, guitar player. Jamie Lou's singer, guitar player. And they're a couple. And they came and brought... So they brought their own picks, which is great. So Garrett plays a song, Jamie Lou plays a song, Garrett plays a song, Jamie Lou plays a song. It just gives you this nice insight into not just their relationship, but their relationship with music too, because they play in a band together. Mm-hmm. They're obviously music lovers. And Garrett's picks, you know, lean more on the sort of his punk origins, and like hard rock. So he plays the Flaming Lips. He plays Husker Du. He plays Dream Syndicate, a really interesting band. Thin Lizzy, which I don't know why we're not all listening to Thin Lizzy constantly.
The Boys Are Back in Town was their big hit.
It was, but you should go beyond that.
Yes, yes.
You know, just there should be a Thin Lizzy. I'm sure there is because everything exists now. Thin Lizzy All the Time Radio. Just,
oh, I'm sure there is, yes.
Go listen to it. It's so good. And then Jamie Lou's picks are Tom Waits and Radiohead and Iron and Wine and The Shins. So there's this more like intimacy, but it's about songwriting and melody. And his is more like louder rock, but really intricate melody. So you can see where how they would be in a band together.
Where they dovetail.
Yeah, it's really, and it's very sweet. And then at the end, they pick a Wilco song, which is their favorite band.
Okay. So that will be Saturday evening at 5 on 91.3, Sunday evening at 5 on KUAF 3, the KUAF Final Hour. Thank you, Lee Wood.
Thanks, Kyle.
Welcome to the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. University of Arkansas Athletic Director Hunter Yurachek offered his inaugural State of the Athletics report on Tuesday morning at the Walton Arts Center in Fayetteville. The breakfast event was organized by the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, and it offered Yurachek an opportunity to discuss some of the often overlooked aspects of the economic impact that Razorback athletics have on the city and the Northwest Arkansas business community.
Steve and I have worked together on a number of initiatives, and this is one of the things he wants to start, an annual kind of event like this. It's a kind of a State of the Union address or State of the Athletic Department address that I come and give. And the Chamber is a big part of our, if we're going to have success as a university, success as an athletic department, we need support of the Chamber and the Chamber community and the Chamber members to make that happen.
That's Hunter Yurachek discussing the relationship between the university's athletic department and the Fayetteville Chamber of Commerce, headed up, of course, by CEO Steve Clark. Yurachek noted there are only a couple dozen universities in the country with a self-sustaining athletic department, meaning they do not collect any student fees or state funds. Arkansas, of course, is one of those. According to the athletic department's most recent annual report, the university had revenue and expenses of about $115 million in the 2017-2018 fiscal year in its athletics department. The university also says it provides an annual economic impact to the region of about $160 million, thanks to the athletics department. I asked Yurachek to compare that type of economic impact in Northwest Arkansas to that of his previous job at the University of Houston, which is located in one of the country's largest cities.
Well, I think there are so many things that impacted Houston from an economic standpoint. Houston wasn't necessarily, the University of Houston athletic program wasn't necessarily a major player in that landscape, because you had the Texans and you had the Astros and you had the Rockets and you've got the Dynamo, and you know, Houston kind of fit in the mix somewhere after that. We're here in a small college town where many of the things revolve around what's happening at the University of Arkansas. To be able to bring those major events here, I mean, obviously we're playing football and we're playing basketball and we're playing baseball, but to get, like, you know, as we talked about, the NCAA regional and super regionals here, hosting the softball regionals last year, to have those special extra events, especially the weekend long events where people are going to come and stay from outside of this community for 2, 3, 4 nights and stay in the hotels and shop and dine here, can have a major impact on a smaller community like this.
There is another event the University of Arkansas is hosting later this year that should also have a financial impact on the region. The 2019 NCAA Division I Men's and Women's Golf Championships will be contested in May at the Blessings Golf Club in Johnson. The Women's Championship is May 16th through the 22nd. The Men's Tournament is May 23rd through the 29th. Both of those tournaments will feature live coverage aired on Golf Channel. We're glad you are with us today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. This is National Consumer Protection Week, and when we come back, we'll check in with Attorney General Leslie Rutledge, who will discuss the number one gripe among Arkansas consumers and what her office is trying to do about it. We're back with more after this.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom provides communications options to help your business adapt to today's demands with tomorrow's technology. With opportunities in virtualization, redundancy, or maximizing your efficiency. Learn more at onecom.com. That's one-comm.com.
As we mentioned earlier, this is National Consumer Protection Week, March 3rd through March 9th. It's a nationally coordinated campaign to help consumers understand their rights and become informed about making decisions to avoid being scammed. Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge says her office is using the week to remind voters about potential scams. She said that automobile complaints are the number one filed complaint her office receives. Automated phone calls, however, particularly from out-of-state solicitors, are the number one gripe the Attorney General receives, and she says she is determined to curtail those calls.
Well, that's the number one gripe I get. Doesn't matter which one of the 75 counties I go to, that is the number one complaint I get. It's about these unsolicited, unwanted phone calls. And I tell people, I know you've signed up for the do not call list. That has to do with legitimate businesses. So a business, whether it's polling or wanting to sell you something, legitimate business will adhere to that. The people we're talking about are criminals. They are con artists, oftentimes from other countries, who are making these calls. What I have done is put pressure on the Federal Communication Commission to relax the rules on our phone companies. Our phone companies have the technology and the power to shut down a phone call when they see that the caller ID has been tricked. So a lot of your robocalls, just like many of your viewers, it'll show up as a local number, 501-479-870. So they answer it because they believe that it's someone they know or someone in their neighborhood. Unfortunately, as soon as they answer it, they realize immediately this is a con artist or a robocall. And so what I have done is put pressure on the FCC. Now we've got to put pressure on our service providers to shut down those calls. If you see if the caller ID, if someone's changed the caller ID, to me that ought to be an automatic.
Yeah.
That is someone who does not have good intentions.
What's been the response from the FCC to that request?
Well, the FCC has relaxed the rules, but now we need to have more enforcement. And again, we've got to put the impetus back on our service providers. They hold the keys to the kingdom of shutting down these robocalls. Yes, we're going to go after the bad actors, but it's very difficult. And the easiest way to shut these down, to stop the 15, 20 phone calls a day that you may be getting, is for our service providers to say, if someone changes, alters the caller ID, so if it originates in one place, they've changed the caller ID before it gets to you, we're going to shut that down.
Yep.
Certainly there's extenuating circumstances of domestic violence shelters and other circumstances where we do need the caller ID to be unknown. However, what we're talking about are the constant phone calls people are getting. And
yeah,
I am determined
get like
to get
six or eight a day. So.
Minimum.
Financial scams, real estate scams, something else that we see a lot of. These can come from a variety of different sources as well. It can come from letters in the mail. They can come from things through social media, particularly email. So tell me what shimming, skimming, and spoofing is.
Right. So spoofing is what we just talked about with regard to the caller ID, where they spoof and trick the caller ID to show a number that's not the actual number it's calling from. The shimming and skimming, which can be fun to say, I understand. So skimming has to do with the stripe on the back of your credit card. And so they'll put something perhaps in a gas pump that's in a remote area or in an ATM in a remote area, and they will steal the information off that little black strip on your credit card. Well, now credit cards have the chip readers on them. That's called shimming. So we have skimming, which is stealing the information off the black strip, and shimming, which is stealing the information off the chip reader. All this to say, probably the most important thing I can convey to Arkansans this week during National Consumer Protection Week, a couple of things. Government is not going to call you and ask you to demand payment over the phone right then. So as we're getting ready for tax season, calls claiming to be from the IRS, those are scam phone calls. Individuals claiming to be the sheriff's department, they're going to come arrest you, or that your kids grandkids in jail, that is a scam phone call. However, do not give out personal financial information. So all this skimming, shimming, everything that we're talking about, the most prevalent thing that we see are when people give out their bank account numbers, their Social Security numbers, because they believe that the IRS is in fact calling, or they believe that the IRS is in fact sending them an email when they're not.
And that is Arkansas Attorney General Leslie Rutledge with Roby Brock. You can watch their full interview on our sister website at talkbusiness.net. That's all the time we have today. We'll be back with another Northwest Arkansas Business Journal report on the Sunday edition of Ozarks at Large. Until then, be sure to follow our daily reporting at nwabusinessjournal.com and also on social media at both Facebook and Twitter. Just follow our pages by searching Northwest Arkansas Business Journal. Until next time, I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
Contributors to this edition of Ozarks included Jacqueline Froelich, Antoinette Grajeda, Zuzana Sitek, Timothy Dennis mastered our show. Thanks to Lee Wood from the KUAF Vinyl Hour for stopping by. You can hear the KUAF Vinyl Hour Saturday evening at 5 on 91.3, Sunday evening at 5 on KUAF3. The Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report with Paul Gatling is a production of Talk Business and Politics and comes to us through our partnership with Talk Business and Politics. You can learn more at talkbusiness.net. A listener-supported service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Waldron. Ozarks at Large, a production of KUAF. Antoinette Grajeda curates our end-of-show music. Today we end with The Silver Lining and their song Towards the Sun. You can learn more about them at their Facebook page. Thanks so much for listening. Back tomorrow at noon and 7.